nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
So this is lecture 13 on heart carrier degradation. Now, this is the second of the four topics that we'll be covering. We already have discussed negative bias temperature instability. Heart carrier degradation is the second. Gate dielectric breakdown, third. And radiation-induced damage, fourth. These are the four dominant reliability issues associated with nanotransistors. And what I wish to do today is very similar. The pattern should become familiar to you. We'll always be talking about time extrapolation. We'll be talking about frequency and duty cycle dependence, voltage and temperature acceleration. Physics is different. And therefore, naturally, we have to reconsider the original physics of the situation. So I have these four topics. We'll start with a background. Then we'll see that unlike negative bias temperature instability, which primarily involve silicon-hydrogen bond dissociation and trapping in pre-existing broken bonds, right? Pre-existing silicon-oxygen broken bonds. In here, in heart carrier, both silicon-hydrogen and silicon-oxygen bonds will be broken. Of course, in this particular case, we have just two. If you had more complicated situation like silicon nitride, then the nitrogen bond might have been broken also. By the word silicon-oxygen bond dissociation, what I mean is in the bulk of the semiconductor, a bulk of the insulator, whatever the bonds are, a fraction of those bonds will be broken by these energetic carriers. Now, let me remind you where we are in terms of the historical context of these problems. You know, we're starting from 1970s, when, in fact, in Fairchild, Bob Noyce, he left Fairchild to start Intel. He's the founder of Intel. And more so than Andy Grove and Moore, Noyce was the original person who actually started all this. And it's essentially the history of Intel on the x-axis. And the y-axis, the transistor count is 10 billion. 10 to the power 10 is 10 billion. And I have already discussed that in the very beginning, it was primarily PMOS, NMOS transistors could not be made, and so negative bias temperature instability was an important issue. By early 80s, the negative bias temperature instability has gone away. People have learned how to keep the voltage low enough and the oxide thick enough so that the field isn't very strong. And therefore, gradually it went away, especially with NMOS coming. It gradually went away. However, the heart carrier issue started to dominate. Now, the heart carrier issue primarily came because when Intel was trying to look for a product, the only niche market it had was the memory market, because at that time, you may remember or you may have heard that many people used magnetic core memories. The transistor, bipolar transistor could do the logic, but for memories, they used to do magnetic core memories. And so that was the niche market they wanted to get into. And a flash-like memory where you inject charge and store it, that was sort of the original market they wanted to get into. And heart carrier degradation or heart carrier injection over a barrier into the insulator was a dominant mode of programming those memories. So therefore, heart carrier degradation surfaced very early on. The other problem was that it was emitter-coupled logic. ECL came from bipolar transistors and carried on to MOSFET. And bipolar transistor generally operated at 5 volts, and they did not want to change the supply for MOSFET. Therefore, that was another reason why the heart carrier degradation came along. By mid-90s, between this decade, 80 to 90s, this was a decade of heart carrier. Every university, everybody, whether you have an STM tip, whether you have any physics background, or you wanted to look into surface phenomena, anything you wanted to do, almost all the professors in semiconductor in some way or other were working on hot carrier degradation. The solution came from two sources I'm going to show. One from Illinois. That was sort of not a commercially adopted solution, but provided insight. And the second one came from an engineer who was coming to IEDM, the International Electron Device Meeting. And during flight, he understood that if you have a LDD, lightly doped drain, close to, then you can reduce the maximum electric field, and therefore you can actually reduce hot carrier degradation. So we'll talk about that. And then gradually that went away as the voltage came down. But as I'm hearing, you know, I work very closely with a broad range of people in the industry. So I'm hearing more and more that hot carrier degradation is again resurfacing as an important reliability concern. So therefore, when you work, I think this is again going to be an important issue. Very briefly, then, what is the condition under which hot carrier degradation take place? This is a schematic of a MOSFET, and I have shown you three red boxes within the blue gate oxide, and these are sort of could be pre-existing defects. Let's say you have started with a fresh oxide. Now, in here, I have in mind an NMOS, not a PMOS. In NBTI, primarily PMOS. Here, I'm thinking about NMOS. And the idea is that when you turn the transistor on with applying a VG, but this time, unlike NMOS, you also apply a VD so that you are collecting drain current. In that case, of course, electron will flow from source to drain. Now, when they get close to the drain, they will be very energetic because now they have collected, like a ballistic electron, they have collected or gained a lot of energy from the drain field. The gate collects electron. It gives you number of electron, inversion charge and all. Drain accelerates it and it will be collected by the drain so that you can immediately see close to the drain, the electron will have a lot of energy. This energy will be higher than the lattice, what lattice would have typically provided it. That's why these would be called hot electrons, because their energy is more than the lattice. And what's going to happen as a result, a fraction of them will scatter sort of on its way to the drain, will scatter and then hit the silicon hydrogen bonds with a very high energy, and they are going to dissociate the silicon hydrogen bond. In the process, through this kinetic kicking of the silicon hydrogen bond, bond will fall apart. This is different from NBTI. NBTI, a hole was captured, weakening the bond, and then it was dissociated. Everything was cold. The hole was cold. The whole process was cold. Here, on the other hand, the electrons are hot. They do not need any holes to the zeroth order. If you want to just break silicon hydrogen bond, they can kinetically break it. Now, obviously, in order to have hot carrier degradation, you need to turn the transistor on. If there is no electron, if you are below VT, of course, there is no hot carrier degradation. And generally, what I'm going to show, and this is a very interesting condition, that VD has to be greater than VG. Under this condition, generally, lots of hot carrier degradation will take place. And the goal of the classes or lecture is to essentially explore the mechanics of it. Now, one important thing about hot carrier is the circuit configuration. On the left-hand side, I have shown an inverter with a PMOS stacked on top of an NMOS. And when the input is 1, the output is 0. When input is 1, NMOS is on. And the NMOS is off. NMOS is on and the output is grounded. And so it gets inverted, right? So you get, if you have 1, output becomes 0. If it is 0, then output becomes 1. And we have talked previously about NBTI focusing on the PMOS. Now we are focusing on the NMOS. Let's consider the input-output characteristics of this particular inverter. Let's say my input is going from 1 to 0, shown here in the red curve. And as the input is going from 1 to 0, I hope you can immediately see that the output will go, the blue line will go from 0 to 1. Now, as it goes from 0 to 1, do you see that the current will only flow in the circuit when both transistors are going through the transition phase. Why? Because on the left, one transistor is off. On the right, the other transistor is off. So therefore, you simultaneously never have current. You may have a lot of voltages floating around, but there is no current. The only time in an inverter current flows is when there is a transition. And shown here in the bottom plot, on this, where this is the current plot. And this is the current which is flowing from the drain to the ground. Now, for this transistor, therefore, there will be a point when the VD, not VDD, VDD is a supply voltage, VD is approximately equal, VG is approximately equal to VD over 2. You know, there will be a point, some point there will be. This is the point where maximum degradation will take place. And the whole purpose of sort of understanding the mechanics of hot carrier degradation is to understand what happens at that point. Now today, for transistors, this is historical in the sense that a person in early or mid-80s would have known this. Today, it's shifted a little bit to the right. Not VD over 2, but little bit to the right. But this would be a reasonable starting place to think about it. Bottom line, no current, no hot carrier. And the current only flows when the two, when there is a transition from one state to another. So on the left hand side, we'll have, when the transistor is on the steady state, we'll have NMOS PBTI gate dielectric breakdown, which will be discussed later. On the right hand side, we have already discussed PMOS NBTI. We'll also again discuss the dead dielectric breakdown. We are focusing on the middle piece in next four lectures. Now, what does NBTI do? We are thinking about phenomenologically, no physics. If you take a transistor and then plot ID lean, what is ID lean? That the linear part of the IDVD characteristics. If you plot ID lean, then how are you going to plot this? So you stress for a period of time and then you measure. You stress for a period of time, then you measure. And generally, these things are logarithmically spaced. The reason being that you will be going many, many decades and it's going to be a power law on log, log on both axes. And so therefore, you want to resolve the early part very carefully. And at the same time, you don't want to spend a lot of measurement time on later parts. So they'll generally you'll space it out. Once you do that, as a function of time, for example, for this particular case, I have VD is 1.7, VD over 2, well, about close to 0.8. So we have VG is about 1. So this is one of the points of maximum degradation. And we are talking about a very, very short channel transistor. It's a 40 nanometer transistor, which is a very short channel transistor, right? These days are even shorter. And what will happen that as a function of time, you will see ID lean is gradually getting down, becoming worse and worse as a function of time. So this is the degradation. This is because purely because of hot carrier degradation. Look at this situation. The current within a very short period of time essentially has decreased by a factor of 6. Your transistor or your IC is long dead. There's no way this transistor is going to work. You can do the same thing for IDSAT. What is IDSAT? It's the saturated part of the IDVD characteristics. The current will likewise drop. Remember, we cannot accept more than 10% degradation. And look at this situation here. It is at least a factor of 8 or 9, one-tenth of the original current. So this is can be a very serious thing. It's not something that you can easily avoid. And it's a 40 nanometer transistor. And it's not something, it's something that you use. So therefore, this is, one has to sort of work on this very carefully. Now you can use various monitors. You can use ID lean. or you can calculate the threshold voltage and monitor the threshold voltage. And oftentimes, because the defects are proportional to a VT, change in the VT, this is a good quantity to measure. You can also do IDSAT, because of course in that case the mobility degradation will become more pronounced, right? In the lower part, mobility doesn't degrade in the idealine. So therefore, all three, if you plot, analyze carefully, then you will get a very good understanding of the physics. Okay. So Celine has a very good question. She is asking that we are going from zero, VG is zero to one, and this is the stress voltage is 1.7 and gate voltage is one. So that is the voltage you sit. And then these are the measurement. At measurement, you do a full curve. Go from 0 to 1 and the corresponding plot out the idealine. So these are measured. Every time you're interrupting the stress at the measure cycle, that is where you're taking this full IDVD characteristics. The second point, which is important. So from the previous slide, of course, I could take the at particular voltage. I could read off the current at various points. I could read off the current and plot it as a function of time. When I do plot it as a function of time, starting from 1 second to maybe 3 hours, 3-4 hours, then what I will see is that the degradation at different temperatures, let's say at 27 degree, you have one degradation, and this degradation, the green points, essentially is going to go up. It's absolute value. Current going down, meaning degradation going up. So that's the absolute value, log plot. Now, first thing is, what is this ICP? I was talking about idealine and IDSAT. What is it, ICP? This is called charge pumping. This is in the, after I'm finished with the hot carrier lectures, the next four, I will tell you how charge pumping actually measures the defects precisely. So this is actually a way of measuring interface defects. You could have plotted VT also, a change in the idealine also. That would add done. The important point is, look at this exponent. Is this exponent t to the power 1/6? Certainly not. You can see here the exponent is on the order of 0.78 or 0.79 in the early phase, and then gradually rolling over, which is somewhat lower, but it's not t to the power 1/6 for sure. T to the power 1/6, you would have one order in the y-axis and 6 order in the x-axis. That is what t to the power 1/6 is. You can see that this is more than that. So the time exponent is certainly in here, whatever region I have shown is t to the power is greater than 0.3. So we'll need a new theory of time degradation. The other important thing is n depends on stress time for this particular transistors. I'm not saying in general. At least for this transistor, you can see it started with 0.78, the green curve. Gradually, it rolled over. And it rolled over with a different exponent. And so, therefore, we need a theory that can account for this. The other thing is that if you stressed it for a certain period of time, and then let it go, don't stress it for another 1,000 seconds. 20 minutes stress, 20 minutes relax. Unlike NBTI, you can see that all three voltages, 7, 6.5 and 6, these three curves, essentially there is no relaxation. Remember in the previous case it used to go up and then it relaxed. No relaxation here. Now there are relaxation in other experiments, but for this particular one, generally one thing you can conclusively say, hot carrier doesn't have significant relaxation. Right? There's no recovery or relaxation in hot carrier degradation. The second thing I wish to emphasize, you know, these are observations. Anytime if you are a doctor, it's better to listen to the patient first before you prescribe a medicine. So this theory of what might be going wrong. So this is the discovery mode. The second thing is degradation, hot carrier degradation is universal. What do I mean by that? Assume that you have, again, going from 0 second to couple of hours, and I have three curves taken from the previous slide. 5.5, 6 is the green, 6.5 and 7, let's say, you have four different curves. And the curves look completely different, right? Their shape is not e to the power 1/6. It is changing all over the place. So therefore, it looks like I cannot have a theory. Because if I wanted to have a theory, if I produce anything for the first one, it will certainly not apply to the second and third one. The remarkable thing, which was discovered previously, but which one of my students, Dhanuv Varghese, essentially put it beyond doubt, is this notion of scaling and universality. Let's start by taking this yellow curve and shift it by an arbitrary factor. Multiply it by arbitrary factor. Let's say 10. I multiply the curve and I have a new brown curve shifted by a factor of 10. Doesn't matter. If you want to multiply it factor of 100, do it by factor of 100. Then shift the second green curve by whatever factor is necessary so that it aligns with the first one. Right? So the green curve, so this factor is not known a priori. Whatever I have to do is, whatever factor I have to multiply, I multiply. And that is S2. The scale factor is S2, S3, and S4. Now, this is remarkable. Because now you can see, it looks like that you are really exploring at different voltages, different parts of the same curve. And this is the universality. And once you know this is universality, every paper you read from 1980s onward, you will see the discovery in universality in all of them. You know, there is this story, right? Five blind person trying to describe an elephant. Some person, the person who catches the leg, says that elephant is like a pillar. And the person who has the tail, they say that it is like a rope. You know, it's because there's five blind person. Together, they have the story probably correct. So similarly, these five voltages are like five blind persons trying to find at different voltages the universality of the degradation. Think about this. Now, if I can just do four orders of magnitude, couple of hours, three, four different voltages, I can construct the projected lifetime from anywhere, starting from any point, to a very, very large time, 10 to the power 10, 10 to the power 11, no problem. 10 years I can go. Previously, if I did different ones, would have projected to different lifetime. So universality is very important. And the theory and experiments both support this universality. So this is one of the important features. What I want to show you later, that this is not only a feature of hot carrier, but also NBTI has the same universality. I kept saying in the previous case, do you remember that x-axis scaling? What I meant by that was exactly this, that take a value, shift it, and when you shift it, you can get the activation energy associated with the diffusion coefficient for hot carrier, for NBTI. So I was meaning that this procedure of constructing universality. Bottom line is, that the defect generation will always be a function. It can be a complicated function. I do not know the functional form. But once you divide T divided by a factor, which depends on the voltage, this is a scale factor, then you have one universal function. And this turns out to be that not only it is as universal in scaling, I have 4 points, for example, four colors, scaled to universal curve on the right hand side. I am focusing on the shape. Had I looked into Ideline degradation, remember the Ideline, I had a series of curves coming down, scale, you have more or less the same thing. It's a little less, you can see the green is gradually diverging out a little bit compared to the magenta, but more or less. And look at that. IDSAT is where you most of the time, whether if you are even an analog designer or in Ideline, you'll be very interested. IDSAT, you'll be interested for digital design and all. Look at this universality coming from this. And this is correct. All technologies that you know of. We haven't seen any violation of this universality. So this is something that we'll be looking at, and we will want to understand the physics and the theory of it. observation 3. The third observation is the following, indicating, and this is sort of implicating, that there must be a silicon-hydrogen bond involved, right? So, in this particular case, this experiment was done. It's a very famous experiment. It was done in Illinois when was the STM discovered? Or around 85, 86, right? And immediately afterwards, people started looking at all sorts of surface phenomena. And one of the first surface phenomena they saw, they explored, was this thing shown here as an inset. You can see that it's a clean, very clean silicon surface on which hydrogen has been attached. Remember the PB centers and the hydrogen has sort of attached. You bring in an STM tip and inject current and ask the question when the hydrogen will get away, right? Because when it's very close, then it will get gradually dissolve. And the white little spots are the places where the hydrogen has gone away. Now, what they saw, and this was an experiment that has got nothing to do with CMOS technology. What they saw was that the tip voltage, the sample voltage is a certain volt, let's say start from 4 to 10, STM tip voltage. If they covered the surface with hydrogen, then they had certain desorption. Do you see that it goes up exponentially as a function of the sample voltage? The more voltage you have, more current you are putting, easier it is to take away. But the important point is that if you put deuterium, what is deuterium? Deuterium is an isotope of hydrogen, right? If you put deuterium, all on a sudden, this drops by at least an order of magnitude. Do you understand the meaning of an order of magnitude? It means a product which was failing in 1 year, which you could not sell, all on a sudden is lasting 10 years, and this is fine for all the technology you want to do. That is the meaning of a factor of 10. Lot of money. You like this money business? And of course, very soon, the CMOS people, of course, are very clever. Engineers are, we claim that we are clever. And so, of course, it was immediately taken up by the engineers. And you can see I have plotted with deuterium and hydrogen, the GM degradation, top right plot. GM is the transconductance, right? And on the bottom right plot, I have the threshold voltage shift as a function of time. I hope it requires no convincing that when you have hydrogen, which is the dark points, the degradation is significantly more compared to if you had deuterium. If you have deuterium passivation, so instead of passivating with dangling silicon bond with hydrogen, passivated deuterium. Now, of course, university people can do it. Whether you can do it in the industry, that remains an issue. So you expect a factor of 2 to 3 or even an order magnitude enhancement when you replace the silicon hydrogen with silicon deuterium bonds. So essentially what we are going to try to explore in the next 4 lectures is the physics of time exponent. Why is there a universal curve? Why does the exponent starts from 0.7, 0.8, gradually saturates to a different value? We'll try to answer this question, that what is it in the deuterium that you have that gives this enhancement? For NBTI, if you try to do the deuterium, you will get a square root of 2. And I leave it as a homework for you to say why it should be square root of 2. But it will be just a square root of 2 for deuterium. Then I will try to explain to you the voltage acceleration. Of course, if you have higher voltage, hot carrier degradation will be more. But how will it degrade? Is it exponential of A over Vd? Does it degrade up like that? Or is it 1 over Vd to the power n? Does it go up by a power law? When you reduce the voltage by a factor of 2, then does the lifetime 1 over Vd, if it is Vd or Vd to the power n, depending on the value of n, as you are reducing where Vd, then your lifetime will be going up. Or T hot carrier, I should say. what rule should I follow? If what is it that physics wants me to follow? And finally, there will be this remarkable thing that hot carrier is actually worse at cold temperatures. This is opposite what you think. Hot means that the distinction is we are talking about hot carrier of electrons. When I say cold, surrounding is cold, lattice is cold. And it turns out that when the temperature goes down, hot carrier is worse. All the military products, hot carrier has to be qualified often at minus 40 degrees C, where the degradation is maximum. So we'll try to get to that. Now, what is the origin of these hot carriers? Where do they come from? So we are getting into the physics of this a little bit. So there is this, let me show you the physics of it. I spend a lot of time making this beautiful picture, so I hope you'll be able to understand it nicely. No, it didn't take that long. So on the top middle, I have my MOSFET, as usual. And on the bottom left, what I have is essentially the conduction and valence band diagram shown here in the two sheets, like two folded sheets. And the band gap is EG shown here in the left. And the barrier that you see, the wall-like barrier that you see, is silicon dioxide. And so I hope you immediately understand from the EC to the top of the silicon is the electron barrier. And from EV to the bottom of the barrier is a hole barrier. And this keeps the electron and hole confined to the channel as they travel from source to drain. The first thing is electron current. And so the electron flies from the source to drain, shown here in the red. By the way, on the right-hand side, I also have a sidewise cutaway on the lead, on this particular picture. This is my silicon, and the right-hand side is gate, and this inside is silicon dioxide. So electrons can fly through. That's one option. But those will not cause any degradation. The red one is just flying through. They don't know about the wall. They are not hitting anybody. So therefore, they cause no degradation. The degradation is caused by the blue one, where they were flying in, then got scattered, and then got injected within the gate. They have sufficient energy to essentially dissociate a bond. And when they dissociate a bond, this could be a silicon hydrogen bond. This is the PB center. You remember at the silicon-silicon dioxide interface, I have this black silicon and the dangling bond. It will be dangling after it gets dissociated. Now, anything that does not get, it doesn't have high enough energy to get injected, those will come back and contribute to the drain current. But they are not going to break any bond because they don't have enough energy. If they lose energy quickly, then they will not essentially do any harm. The third process is equally important. The third process shown here in blue has a cascade of energy loss. Cascade of energy loss. This indicates interaction with phonons. Every time you see a knee, that is when it is losing energy with phonons, or it could be losing energy by having an impact ionization with a hole and thereby creating these green holes. And these green holes shown on the top, if you look at the arrow, the green holes will come out as a substrate current. Now, a part of these green holes, these green holes does no harm, but it is an indicator of how hot the electrons are. Hotter the electrons, more is the gate current, like blue gate current, but more, which may be difficult to measure sometimes, gate current is a small value, but more will be the green substrate current. So substrate current will become a thermometer of how hot my electrons are. Now, the ones that will cause trouble, a fraction of those holes will get out through the gate by going over the barrier, the hole barrier. Those hole barriers, a fraction of them could become trapped, shown here on the right-hand side, like this open circle. And when this flying electron essentially recombine with these, they will break silicon-hydrogen, silicon-oxygen bonds. So we'll be looking for these two types of bond dissociation, silicon hydrogen, silicon oxygen. Now, the immediate question you could ask that why do I have to look for Ig and Id? Wouldn't my drain current be hot also? Yes, drain current will be hot. But you see, drain current has all these mixtures. The ones that did not go and do any damage to the gate, those are also included in here. So therefore, drain current measurement by itself is not sufficient. It is a far more cleaner indication to look at the substrate current. Yes.
Is there any effect of oxide electric field?
Yes, certainly. Certainly. Yes, certainly. Those will come. This is the big picture. And when I talk about voltage acceleration, I'll certainly cover that in great detail. Yes.
When we are monitoring the current from the substrate, are we looking at the second mechanism that you talked about?
When you are looking at the green line,
mm-hmm.
What do you mean?
When we measure the current from the substrate.
We are looking at this thick green arrow, the current that is coming out. But
as a kind of indicator of the hot carrier effect.
Right.
So I got the feeling that we are only looking at the effect of the second mechanism.
Why second mechanism? Both has to be accounted for.
Yeah, I know, but...
Yeah, okay. Don't get that feeling. Because I will make sure that you don't leave with that feeling. All right. So, let's look at the bias condition of the transistors. If you understand reliability well, you will actually begin to see how MOSFET works. Because you have to understand them in great detail. Assume VG is zero. If VG is zero, then how many current you have? Very little, right? But VG is zero, VD is very high. VD is very high. So therefore, any electron that can reach the junction will have extremely high field. They'll be very hot. Transistor off, very few carriers on the junction, very hot carriers. But few, very hot, doesn't matter. When you do VD equals 2, you have turned on the transistors. Now, your drain field, depletion field, or the pinch-off field is actually lower because you have pulled the VG down. VD is in the same place, so actually lower. Now, you have electrons, more electrons, but also they are hot, relatively hot, less than before, but not zero. Then, if you went to turn on VG equals VD, then, of course, you're pushed it all the way down, lots of electrons flying, they are not hot. Because when they are going rolling down that potential well for an EC value, they are repeatedly getting scattering. So they cannot really climb up the potential barrier, right? This is why the maximum degradation occurs close to VG and VD. This is a balance between number of electrons and how hot they are. Now, an important thing is to look at the transverse side. On the source side, if it is a NMOS, you have correspondingly, P substrate and an N gate. What happens when the transistor is off with a large VD, current will be injected either from the gate into the substrate or holes will be injected from the substrate into the gate. Right? This is the field direction is that like that. Now, when you have applied the voltage a little bit more, now it's no longer, this one is no longer in this as the same direction because this has come down, relatively speaking. And so in this case, you'll begin to inject electrons. And finally, at some point when you are on that side, electron will reverse direction because now this is more than the gate field. Right? So the electron will essentially reverse direction. So in the beginning, you had hole injection, go through zero, and then go to the right and get electron injection. Now this requires a little bit of thought, but hopefully you will look at this diagram later on and convince yourself that this would be the right way to think about it. So that tells us that there will be these three regions that we'll have to discuss. First is a top set of plot. In the blue, I'm showing you the hole current. In the beginning, most few electrons, they can generate very hot. They can generate a lot of holes and the holes get injected. That's the blue ones. After a little bit, when the transistor is turned on, then the red electron region encompassing region 2 and region 3, that gets turned on. And so these electron and holes will cause damage. The damage is shown on the very bottom. Silicon hydrogen bond dissociation requires hole capture first. Remember in the previous case, it has to recombine before it could break a bond. Otherwise, it doesn't have sufficient energy. So therefore, when the hole capture is important or hole injection is important, in the bottom row in the blue, you will have silicon hydrogen, silicon oxygen bond dissociation. In between, when the electrons are getting energetic, then you will have on the bottom row, red peak silicon hydrogen bond dissociation. And towards the end, you have a lot of electrons flying, but the electrons are not energetic. So therefore, you will just have electron trapping. And the corresponding reversal in the gate current, which I just explained, is shown here in the middle row, that in one part is a hole current going out, in the other part, electron current going out. So this is the corresponding reversal, is a signature of which region you are in. Are you in 1, 2, or 3? And then correspondingly analyze the physics that way. All right. So let me get started on the silicon hydrogen bond dissociation. Why? Because remember the deuterium experiment. So therefore, I cannot ignore that one. So very quickly, we are talking about this depassivation of these PP centers and at the silicon dioxide interface. We'll be talking about this silicon hydrogen, silicon oxygen bond dissociation a little bit later. I hope by now you know what the doublet means, right? 10.4 Gauss doublet. I hope you know all those things now. Now, what I'm going to show you, that for many of the experiments where they have dominant defect, generally the silicon hydrogen bond dissociation is a factor of 3 larger than the silicon oxygen bond dissociation, if it is dominant, if it shows deuterium effect. And this one you will do by analyzing a small experiment as a homework. This distinction I have made several times, so let me not make this distinction anymore. NBTI, the important point is, there was no VD in NBTI, right? VD was zero. And so therefore, channel was uniformly inverted, holes were got captured, so the diffusion was essentially one-dimensional into the gate. The difference is, for hot carrier, remember the only place it can get degraded is close to the drain. So therefore, it will no longer be a uniform one-dimensional degradation, but rather degradation will start from the corner and the hydrogen will diffuse. Is there any difference? Does it make sense? I'm asking you. Okay. So in the corner, because that's where the carriers got hot, right? Vg equals Vd over 2, that's where the carrier got hot. So on the right, the blue region shows where the hydrogen will get away. NMOS, no holes. So therefore, nobody is helping me. Same theory, silicon hydrogen bond dissociation. We can easily analyze it in terms of reaction diffusion theory. You can, the first equation, let's say, you can simplify it in terms of the product of NIT and NH0, the number of hydrogen close to the interface, and that's a constant. And you remember that the total number of broken bonds is equal to number of hydrogen which are floating around because they got dissociated from the same number of bonds. And we did this calculation for NBTI. I'm just putting it for reference. The idea was that if it gets diffused by a square root of dt for a time t, then the idea was that the number of interface trap generated would have been the NH0, which is the height of the triangle, square root of dt. And if you want, you can divide by a factor of 2, because the area of a triangle has that factor of 2. But the bottom line is, once you combine this equation, this NBTI conservation equation, with the first equation on the top, then we got for hydrogen, we got t to the power 1/4. For H2, we got t to the power 1/6. So on and so forth. What is the corresponding equation for hot carrier? Very simple, let's see. Now, hot carrier is happening from a corner. So therefore, instead of a diffusion front, like a wedge gradually moving away, it will be like a pyramid going gradually expanding. Do you see this? This is like it starts from 1/4 of a circle, the cylinder, gradually getting larger and larger, and therefore the circle will now expand. Circle is the cross section, the depth direction is the width. I know how to calculate the area of a circle. NH0, right? What is this? Pi r square. So dHt square. Why pi over 12? Because it's a pyramid. In the middle point, it has maximum intensity. And as the cylinder is expanding, edge of the cylinder has zero concentration. So therefore, this is a pyramid. It's not a cylinder because it's in the middle, it's maximum. At the edges, it's zero. Solve this problem. And remarkably, this will tell you that this has to be t to the power half. This is something people have seen anytime they have strong deuterium effect. They have always seen this type of t to the power half dependence indicating hydrogen dissociation. Half or little bit less, maybe one third if you have H2 dissociation. And so therefore, you could easily do the scale factor, the corresponding things if you have a factor of half. You see there you have the KF, KR, you remember those, right? This time KF is happening, it's a different physics now. They are happening because the energetic electrons essentially disrupting the bonds, breaking the bonds. So we'll have to do the physics of KF, but we'll do that later. T to the power n, n is on the order of half. And you can see I can put the whole prefactor, KF, N0, and KR, into a constant called T0, which depends on voltage. And therefore, it is a function of, it's a power law function of the scaled T divided by T0. And so therefore, you can always scale these functions. And so once you know what the dependencies is from the physics of KF and KR, you can get a universal curve. Does it have relaxation? I knew that for hot carrier, it has significant relaxation. It turns out the relaxation for hot carrier degradation, I'm sorry, NBTI had a lot of relaxation. Hot carrier generally have minuscule. And minuscule meaning on the order of maximum 10 to 20%, never more. And the reason is again very simple. When you want to come back in 1D, no problem. But it is very difficult once the genie is out of the bottle. You know that story, right? Putting the genie out of the bottle is easy. Putting it back is difficult because it's coming from a point source. And getting things out of the point source is easy. Getting it into the point source is difficult. It doesn't want to come back. And the physics, essentially, you will do the homework associated with it. Very simple. And the result is this. If you assume hydrogen... Oh, so let me tell you what the how you will do the calculation. In the beginning, the pyramid that you see is the expansion, how it gets expanded, how hydrogen gets away from the center point. And when you stop generation, hydrogen will come back, and that's the inverted pyramid. That is the funnel in which it is going to sink. All you have to do is to calculate the red pyramid and the inverted, the dashed pyramid, and from that you can calculate that for hydrogen coming back, the relaxation will be 20% because the value will be 1/4. And if it were hydrogen H2 diffusion, then it will be on the order of 10 to 15%. Okay. So no more than just a few percent of degradation would be sufficient to interpret these results. Now, my final point on this one is what is it that the deuterium does when this bond dissociation takes place? Now, of course, you could say deuterium is heavy, right? Deuterium is heavy, and so therefore it makes it more difficult for it to get out. But the real reason is not that. The real reason is on the right-hand plot, I'm showing various modes at which it's a vibration mode of these bonds. And it turns out silicon hydrogen is very well matched to the silicon. So when you excite something, it quickly gives away to its friends on the substrate. And therefore, you cannot keep it excited long enough. Silicon deuterium, on the other hand, the modes are in a different place compared to the silicon. And therefore, it cannot really give away its energy very quickly. And therefore, it bonds breaks faster. We'll consider this in more detail later on. All right. So we are talking about the second type of bond dissociation involving silicon oxygen, and we'll try to see what the corresponding theory is. Why is it that the car saturates? Is there a simple way of thinking about it? Again, reminding myself in general that we are talking about the bonds, which are essentially the silicon-oxygen bonds. And you remember, right, the white atoms are silicon and red atoms are oxygen, and the tetrahedra propagates through the random network. You remember the Maxwell's relationship and all those things. And we wish to know that how does this red center atom in the middle figure, how does the atom may get broken and so that it is retracted. When you're looking at this picture, it's good to remember that the white in this middle figure is like the black in the right figure. So it's the same silicon atom, right? So it's the same thing. I just took it from two different sources. So therefore, the color is not consistent. So we are talking about this silicon-hydrogen bond dissociation. I'm sorry, silicon-oxygen bond dissociation. And therefore, I'll be primarily focusing on then this hole capture and electron hole recombination that has enough energy to dissociate it. And you can immediately see that even if you had one volts, because of the band gap and where the hole gets trapped, you can at least get 2 to 3 EV from the recombination. So you don't have your own energy, but you have the reaction energy leading to bond dissociation. How would a bond break? You remember generally all bonds have a set of vibration modes shown here in this potential well. On the left hand side, these are bound levels. And when you put a little bit of energy, they oscillate. And they oscillate with different amount of energy given here by this red ladder. So if you are oscillating less, you're on the bottom energy. If you're oscillating more, then you are on the fourth red horizontal line. And then if you're oscillating really fast, then you're over the barrier. Over the barrier and long gone and broken. And on the left-hand side, you have an intact bond. On the right-hand side, you have a broken bond. And we wish to know the kinetics of this broken bond. This is what I meant by this reverse barrier being very high so that you cannot come back. Now, the point I want to emphasize right here is that these bonds are distributed in energy. So what I'm showing here is the number of bonds in silicon oxygen, which has a certain amount of energy. Let's say the mean energy is 4.5 EV. Then there's a little bit of sigma on the top and on the bottom, giving it a distribution. But do you see it is cut off on the high side and the low side? It is cut off. And it is cut off why? Because the ring size has a cutoff. Because remember, the ring size, you cannot have too big or too small. Therefore, the corresponding bond energy also has a cutoff. This cutoff is important. Otherwise, it will have a very different characteristics in terms of saturation. Assume, for example, this simple scenario. I have a single silicon hydrogen bond, a single one. And somehow, by electron hole recombination, the bond is getting broken. Let me assume on the picture on the left at 4.5 EV, I have a single bond. If I have a single bond, then I can write it as the first order equation where I say dNi dt. This time it's silicon oxygen. KF is the forward dissociation rate. N0 minus NiT is the number of remaining bonds. Now, why am I putting NiT? Because the bonds that will be broken, these silicon oxygen are close to the interface. So these are called fast defects or border traps, the things that are close to this, because that is where it's most energetic. So that's where it will break. Although there are lots of silicon oxygen throughout the bulk, they are not getting affected to the zeroth order. Now, why do I not have the reverse reaction term? That is what I explained. The reverse barrier is very big. And so therefore, I don't have a reverse reaction. Why do I not have a diffusion term? Because the oxygen in principle could diffuse around. It could, but you see, unless there is a term, reverse term, the diffusion does not affect the dissociation. It's the reverse term that was sort of providing the feedback. With no feedback, you do not have any way to communicate. It could diffuse whatever it wants. Well, as far as we are concerned, we don't care. Now, simple first order differential equation, just like almost like math is like trapping. So therefore, what you'll have is like an RC circuit. So therefore, on the right hand bottom plot, I am showing you initially the curve will go up very quickly. Then it will saturate because the solution is 1 minus e to the power t over tau, right? That's the solution of that equation. That's fine, but that's not the silicon hydrogen bond dissociation that we saw in the experiment. Remember, in the experiment, the curve started with 0.78 or 0.79, and then it was gradually saturating. Remember the universal curve. This is a universal curve, but this is not the curve we saw. So how do you have to do this? Remember, all the silicon oxygen bonds, they don't know about each other. They are sort of doing their thing on their own. So what I can do, I can write dNt dt simply as a sum of individual dissociation. They are not talking to each other. This is 10 to the power 18 or so, the number of defects on that level. They are 10, 15 nanometers apart. They don't know about each other. So in that case, What will happen that instead of the delta function at 4.5 eV, I'll have a distribution of energies. Area under the curve is equal to the delta function because the total number has to be the same. Now you can see what's going to happen. Look at the right hand side. In the right hand side, I have a series of green curves. The first green curve, which starts close to 1 second and saturates close to 10 to the power 4 seconds or so, that is the weakest bond. That will break the first, right? That will the first term. Then the second green, third green are the bonds which are increasingly stronger. So therefore, they are breaking a little bit later. One thing you also notice that the green curves are saturating a little bit above the previous one. Why? Because if you look at the distribution on the left-hand side, you will notice that so long you are on the left-hand side of 4.5 eV, you have, as the energy bonds are getting stronger, you have more and more of those bonds. There is a peak, and then you are on the other side. In that case, the number will go down. But most of the time, 4.5 eV, most of the time you wouldn't have. You are on most of the time on the left of this. Because when you recombine, you will make it get 3-4 eV. You are not going to get 9 eV for recombination. So therefore, the curve generally goes up, but you can see the saturated green points are this spacing is becoming smaller and smaller, reflecting the fact that this curve is gradually getting saturating. When you sum them, look at that curve. That's exactly the universal curve that you saw because the experimental data are the circles. And when you sum them up, you see the magenta line essentially reflecting the universality that was discussed before. When you have very small voltage, low voltage, you break the early part. When you have very high voltage, you break the later part. And then that creates the universality that we saw. And so therefore, at the end of the day, the solution would be the simply sum of the individual RC circuits, sort of. Sum of them. The Kf will be the dissociation factor, Kf multiplied by T. And therefore, you can see that regardless of the distribution, you can have a new scaling function, T divided by T naught Vg over Vd. This, because the function at the end of the day depends on T divided by T naught. That's the function. Everything else is a sum. So therefore, this would be a single function that you can scale. Now, I'm going to show you in the next class how to calculate the TD. In fact, if you calculate how many substrate current is coming out, what is your drain current, you can actually find out this immediately. You don't have to go to the lab and make any measurements of the degradation itself. You can immediately do it. Phi II is the impact ionization barrier, and Phi I is a barrier for creating the defects. So I'll show that. And for modern transistors, it's a little bit more complicated. But again, you know, this is no rocket science, very easy. So I'll explain that to you. So to conclude then, I tried to explain to you that why why hot carrier degradation is important. Primarily because, remember, the first product that people wanted to get into was memory. And the memory, when you want to inject carriers, you put a substrate voltage, a large substrate voltage. And that's how, which launches electron into the gate. So that's why it started substrate hot carrier. This is channel hot carrier that I explained. But substrate hot carrier was the original thing. I told you how it breaks silicon, hydrogen, and silicon oxygen bonds and how they differ. Silicon hydrogen has one exponent, very low relaxation. Silicon oxygen have essentially a saturating carbon, no relaxation whatsoever. So you can say which one is what simply by looking at the degree of relaxation you have, and hydrogen and deuterium experiment important. And finally, this is a universal curve, but you have to treat the universality separately because they are not the same universal function. So have to treat them separately to account for any, to decouple any correlation, correlated effect. And once you have done that, then you can apply to any voltage, any temperature without knowing any physics whatsoever. You just scale it and then you can extrapolate to any voltage. All right. Thank you.